Hey Liverpool fans, have you seen the latest release? At Anfield Index, we've teamed up with Liverpool FC to announce that the brand new 24-25 LFC Nike home kit and anthem jacket are out now, and they're hotter than ever. The brand new kit pays homage to the legendary Rome 1984 side, featuring sleek pinstripe detailing that brings a touch of history to our modern game. Whether you're cheering from the cop or watching from home, you'll feel the spirit of the Reds coursing through every stitch. The best part? You can grab yours today. The new kit and training range are available in official stores, online, and through the LFC store app. Don't wait, order now and be ready to show your Liverpool pride and style. Get your hands on the new 24-25 LFC home kit and anthem jacket today. Let's make this season unforgettable. You'll never walk alone.
I'm Trent Alexander-Arnold.
I'm Curtis Jones.
I am Cody Gakpo.
Putting on the Liverpool top for the first time, it was a dream come true, and I'll never forget that moment.
The new LFC 24-25 season Nike home kit is out now.
Buy it today, along with our new goalkeeper kit and training range, at your official LFC stores. Online at liverpoolfc.com/store and on the official LFC store app.
You will never walk alone.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello and welcome to the Transfer Committee podcast. This is for the summer of the 2022 season, so prior to the 2022-2023 season kicking off. As you already must have listened to this before, we do two every year, but we will still introduce you to the team that works on this one. They are the A team on this pod. First and foremost, the head scout of Anfield Index, Mr. Dave Hendrick. How are you doing?
Evening, I'm good. How are you?
Very good, thank you very much. It's been a while since we've been on a pod, but we'll probably do two in 2 days now.
Yes, that is the plan as things stand.
Absolutely. Right, we have finance director extraordinaire, Mr. Mo Chatra, dropping bombs on Man City usually. But today, talking about transfers.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm leaving him alone at the moment.
Yeah, having pity on them, mate. Are you having pity on them at the moment?
Yeah, I just get bombarded by cry more type messages from them. So let's get the Champions League out of the way. And if we win that, then I'll go full guns blazing against them lot. All 250 of them.
Fair enough. And the data man, head of data science. It's the head of stats and analytics, whatever you want to call him. Mr. Darth Kennett, force
head
choking.
Head of force
chokes. Well, that's it. Head of force chokes. He knew it was coming. And the father of Nat Phillips. How are you doing, mate? You okay?
I'm really good, Gax. How are you, mate?
It's been a while since I was on under pressure as well now, a month or so.
You're probably going to come back for the Champions League final and do that one, aren't you?
Cause... I'm not sure. We'll see. Yeah, if there's room.
No, glory hungry. Yeah, that's it. Turn up when all the business is done.
I'm not here, so you're going to have to... Yeah, unless.
Yes, then I will. Then I will jump on and host. Yeah. Absolutely.
Can't leave Rosie could do business to Rundish, can you?
No, he just starts the pod as if we're talking. But anyway, this isn't to rip up on Brundish. I'll be seeing him in Paris in a few days. But okay, this is a really different one this year because We've done some business already. Carvalho's done. We did Diaz in
also, the season's not even finished, Gags.
And the season, we've still got a game to go, absolutely. There's lots of rumours flying around about some things that are going on, maybe not. I think we should start there, actually, with the midfielder. It's, I can't even pronounce his name. Tchouameni, is that right?
Aurelien Tchouameni.
Tchouameni, there you go. Right, so Tchouameni is the guy that we're linked to.
Can we just recap who we actually signed in January on this pod?
Yeah, let's do it, if you remember.
Yeah, absolutely, because we signed Tchouameni, Conrad Lehmé, and Darwin Núñez in the January pod. That was our three-man incoming. Boom. So we just take those three again.
And the only reason we didn't sign Diaz is because before the pod, when we were picking positions, we wanted a nine rather than a wide forward.
Primarily a nine, Gag said. Well, yeah, that's
really yeah cool. Otherwise we absolutely would have been all over Luis Diaz. So despite Sam Maguire telling me that he was too expensive, because Sam likes to just piss on my parade every couple of days just to, you know, get his own giggles going.
But yeah, so that was our January window, Gags. And
let's just repeat that pod. Can we insert it in this? But no, we won't do that. But, basically, so Tchouameni, the rumours are he's off to Madrid. He's now off to Paris, supposed to be coming to Liverpool. So he's in a three-way at the moment. I don't know. Nobody knows the truth and what's going on, but he's literally linked to all three now from today. That's the latest. So...
is he in what a menage a trois, Gags?
We don't know. We don't know. So I think what we're going to...
is always a good place to be.
It is. What we're going to have to do is assume that there have to be some alternatives to this player. So, Dave, let's start with who you think the alternatives would be to this player if Liverpool do not sign him.
Right, so he's a really unique profile of player who excels as both a six or as a box-to-box number eight, and he has enormous potential to be whichever one you want him to be long-term. I would say in the short term, we'd have been looking at him as that box-to-box eight, have him, Fabinho and Thiago as the first-choice midfield, and then longer term, perhaps transition him as Fabinho's replacement as the number six. So if he doesn't happen, and obviously there's a lot of conflicting reports going on at the minute, that RMC report that said he told his teammates he was joining Real Madrid looks like it was nonsense, looks like it's something that may have come from Real Madrid, maybe in an attempt to push us out of the race so they could lower the price down on him, because reports in Spain are they don't want to pay anywhere close to the 80 million euro that Monaco are looking for. So if we don't sign him, there's nobody out there who is that profile of player. Declan Rice, maybe you could make an argument for, but his price tag is going to be extortionate. Calvin Phillips, potentially, but I'm not sure he's of the level that we would want. There's also some injury issues there that you might have to have concern with. So what I've done is I've put together two lists, one for box-to-box type midfielders who can play the number eight position for us, and one for defensive midfielders. Now, I know that the data department have a couple of people they'd like to include as well, so I'll leave it to Dan, once I've done mine, to talk of those as well. So the four I've got are Conrad Lehmé, who is a staple on this podcast. I think we've brought him up for probably the last four windows, maybe. Dynamic player. The best presser in Europe, can play multiple positions. He can play the six. I don't know that you'd want him there long term. He can play right back. He's probably best in our system as an eight. My concern with him would be, I think you're buying what he's going to be. I don't think there's much of a development ceiling on him. He is a very good player. I just don't know that he has a step to great player in him. But good on the ball, lots of energy, very, very good off the ball, clever player, and like I say, versatile. Matthias Núñez of Sporting would be next. Again, can play the six when needed, but is best used as that eight as that sort of destructive force off the ball. Really good ball carrier, progressive minded, aggressive. Rumoured to be one of the people Pep Guardiola has looked at as a sort of Fernandinho replacement in terms of that old Fernandinho, that more dynamic, rangy box-to-box player that played with Nigel de Jong, rather than this sort of later edition of him that was more of a sitting player. Nunes fits the age profile for us. He's had a bit of an inconsistent season, but there's a lot of talent there, and last season he was outstanding. Yves Bissouma, I've got next. He can do everything. I mean, he is a really well-rounded midfielder. He's good in all aspects. There might not be anything that he stand out great in, but he's good at everything and not bad at anything. The knock on him could be there is a legal case hanging over his head that may rule him out of our consideration. Aston Villa, obviously strongly linked. He's been linked to a couple of other clubs. Going into, I think, the last year of his contract, so the price could be something that we'd like. Very, very good player. Again, like Lamer, not sure he has that step to great in him, but certainly a player who's proven he can play in the Premier League. And then Kwadwo Kone of Borussia Mönchengladbach. Basically, Bissouma, but 4 years younger. No attitude problems, no legal issues. Has more experience in that number six position as well. This season, he's played as a right-sided eight, as a six. He's played in a two. Super dynamic player, good ball carrier, good passer of the ball, really aggressive at winning the ball back. Upside is enormous with him. He's just had a sensational season with Gladbach in a bad Gladbach team, massively outperforming Florian Neuhaus, who'd been linked to us before. I think he might be the one of this four, but my suggestion would be that we look at one from this group and one from the group of players who are predominantly a six, because what we were looking at paying for Tchouaméni will cover basically any two from this group. My defensive midfielders, Amadou Onana from Lille, was at Hoffenheim, was at Hamburg, moved to Lille last summer to replace Boubacary Soumaré, who went to Leicester. Tall and rangy, 6'4", really good athlete. Shades of Vieira in terms of how he can pick the ball up and just carry it forward. Big long stride on him, wins the ball back really well, very aggressive. He's young and he's got flaws in his game that need to be ironed out, but I think he could be a massive talent. Cheick Doucouré, just a really good all-round number six, young, plenty of potential, only 22, aggressive in the tackle, decent passer of the ball, good positionally. John Onana, very similar to Cheick Doucouré. Onana can actually play a bit more advanced as well if you need him to. He reminds me a little bit of Conor Gallagher in that kind of never-ending movement type of player, but can play as a six and hold things really well. And Mohamed Kamara from RB Salzburg, who is another young player, Mali international, I believe. Good ball winner, good shielder, clever player, reads the game well, keeps things ticking, doesn't try to take too much out of the ball. Might have some limitations in terms of his ability on the ball, but at 22, I think you can hope for development. And then the last one to put on that list would be Ibrahim Sanguer of PSV Eindhoven. He's the most ready of the defensive midfield list, without question. He's 24, I think he turns 25 later this year. Good ball winner, great athlete. Limitations on the ball, and I think quite a low ceiling. I think you get him for what he is now, and I think he can be a very good squad player for us. I don't know that he's necessarily good enough to become a starter for us, and that will be my concern on him, but he has been linked to us in recent days. So that'll be my two lists. The four-man list for box-to-box, Lamer, Nunes, Bissouma and Kone, and the five-man list for the holding midfield role, Onana, Doucouré, the other Onana and Kamara.
Okay, let's get let's do the numbers, Darth, on these guys.
Yeah. So Dave was right about Tchouaméni having a unique profile. He is the one who kind of ticks all the boxes. He plays a lot for a start, which is an underrated thing. In terms of over 3,000 minutes for Monaco the last two seasons. He's also the closest in physical stature to Fabinho at the moment. So Fabinho is like 1.88 meters, 78 kilos, and Tchouaméni is 1.85 meters, 75 kilos. The only one other one who's close really on the list is the Portuguese fella, Nunes, 1.83 meters and 78 kilos. And possibly Yves Bissouma after that. But so you've always got to like that physical stature as well, especially at a young age with Tchouaméni he's got. So he's got that on his side as well. If you look at, for example, ball progression across those players, all Tchouaméni, again, he's a very good ball progressor for his position, where he's very good in the air as well. He stands out 1v1, and he also stands out with his tackles and interceptions, and his carries on the ball as well. So he basically there isn't really an obvious weakness in his game. So, right, let's take some of the big players, like Konrad Lehmer. He, for example, has all the attacking output, but that's largely because he plays in a very good Leipzig team. But he also has the pressing. That's probably the only thing that Tchouaméni doesn't really stand out on is the pressing. Now, that might just be because Monaco aren't a particularly pressing team. Dave, I can neither confirm or deny that, whether Monaco is a team pressing a lot.
Not the two central midfielders, no. They're very much sit and hold and let others press out of position, but you shield that defence. Him and Youssef Fofana very much tasked with just sitting and holding, winning the ball when it comes into that central area, trying to force things wide.
Yeah. Okay. So Lehmer's got he's also got the ball progression. He's good with the tackles and interceptions and the carries. He's got two weaknesses, which is aerially, and also on the 1v1 duels, he does get a lot of dribble pass, but that's probably going to be a legacy of also with his pressing. It's leaving him more exposed to being dribble passed as well. Yves Bissouma, Dave mentioned the rape trial, which is pending there, but he is, as you said, he's a pretty solid all-round player. Obviously, 2 years plus for Brighton. The only thing he really hasn't got is ball progression to any great degree. He's especially strong in the 1v1 situation, which is good because he's going to get exposed in our system, and he has to be good 1v1. The tackles and interceptions for him are good. Nunes, we have to take really on the scouting department's views because unfortunately, once again, the Portuguese league isn't adequately covered by our data providers, Gags. We still haven't sorted that license out yet. Maybe we need to get Sam Maguire's company to feed us the data so we can do this here.
Yeah.
With the Portuguese league. Kone, only one season, I think Dave said here, but 21 years old, just under 6'4". He has got some really quite interesting features in his profile. His passing looks progressive. He does look good 1v1. And no obvious, no glaring weaknesses apart from in the attacking side, you know, him. But, you know, he's 21 and he's playing, you know, in the Bundesliga. So his tackles and interceptions are good. His carries are good. The ones Dave mentioned about wanting to throw in as additions to this is, first of all, is Youri Tielemans, who is now 25. Now, the reason why Tielemans is appealing is not only because he has a very, very good profile as a kind of as an eight and an attacking midfielder, but we've talked about him on this podcast before, but he's still only 25. And he started his career age 16, and he's got 10 full seasons. He's got 31,000 minutes of playing time in his career. And the next on this list, we've got the next highest player is Konrad Lehmer, who's got 14,000 minutes. It's pretty astonishing. So in terms of his experience and what you're going to get for somebody who is 25, and he's in his contract situation is an extremely an attractive proposition, because he is like the finished article, and he's a very, very good player, as we know. Plus, the only disappointment would be that he's been plodding around playing Brendan ball for the last 2 years, and he's probably a little bit out of shape. But if Klopp can, if he can turn Thiago, and you know, as, what did Thiago say the other day, Gags? He says that you taught me how to run. I think Kloppo can do the same with Youri Tielemans as well.
My only concern with Tielemans is, has he played too many minutes at this point in his career? So I've seen a few people looking into, you know, these high-profile youngsters that explode at 16, 17, 18. They're playing 3,000 and 4,000 minutes in their late teens into their early 20s.
Yeah.
And then there's like a sharp drop-off. And like Marcus Rashford and Dele Alli would be two prime examples. And Jack Wilshere is another. And that would be my only... That's one of my concerns with Tielemans. The other one, the reason he wasn't part of my list was, I do just wonder if he's dynamic enough. If what we're looking for is more of a chaos maker, like what Henderson used to be, someone that can go and break things up and cause a bit of chaos. And I'm not sure Tielemans can do that. I think Tielemans, if we signed him, could potentially become the left-sided eight in a year or two, that more playmaker type where Thiago and Naby kind of play now. So I'd absolutely be in favour of him. And the other option Dan has, my thought is exactly the same. Great, great player, but I think more suited to that left-sided role, that playmaker sort of dictating role, than that dynamic sort of go and cause things to happen type of role.
Benacer. Yeah, Benazza.
Benazza, yeah.
Of AC Milan. So he's 24. Very good in on the attacking side of it. Very good ball progression. Aerially is his only real weakness. 1v1, he's passable compared to the others. He's not. He's weaker side of things. But in tackles and interception and his carries are very, very good. So he is that more progressive eight. As Dave was saying. And then the other, Sangare, again, is another one like Nunes. It would be a scouting decision. Again, it's difficult to get the data on some of these players. But of all the other ones that Dave mentioned, I think the one who is the best at the younger profile off on the stats pick is Kone.
Okay. Have we lost you there, Darth?
No, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay, yeah, that's fine. I thought you were going to expand.
No, because I already did Kone. I was just saying, trying to come back to him. But you know, the other ones which are on the list for the you know, for the specialist DM position, the one that does stand out the best of all those ones on the list of similar price is Kone.
Okay. Is that everything? We can go to Mo next?
Yep.
Yeah, Mo. Come on then, give us some numbers.
Will do, but just before we come on to the numbers, I think it's important to just make note of the fact that we have slight issues around the homegrown rule. So the typical rule is that you're allowed no more than 17 non-homegrown players in a first team squad of 25 or up to 25, and therefore 8 homegrown. Now, we only had 7 homegrown. And so the squad size in the second half of the season after the January transfer window was only 24. Now, the 17 we maxed out at the second half of the season were comprised of Thiago, Bobby, Alisson, Diaz, Fabinho, Naby, Konate, Sadio, Matip, Minamino, Origi, Robertson. Robertson is not classed as homegrown. Mo, Adrian, Jota, Tsimikas and Van Dijk. Now, we do know, obviously, that Origi is moving on, and it's possible that, you know, Taki might go, and possibly one of the front three.
And Adrian.
Adrian might be another possibility. So that's just something to bear in mind when it comes to, you know, the discussion to be had during this transfer committee. But in terms of the numbers, so let's start with the box-to-box midfielders to begin with. So Konrad Lehmer, he's valued at £20 million. He only has a year left on his contract. So that's the same valuation that we placed on him in the January window. And, you know, Leipzig in recent years have been good at, you know, extracting good value from some of their prized assets. So I think that we struggled to get him for less than that, despite the fact he's only got a year left. Nunez from Sporting, I think that 25 million is what Sporting would look for. He also is linked. He's also part of the TFM agency, who are one of the top 20 biggest agencies when it comes to representing footballers in the world. So their agents' fees could be potentially higher than some of these other players that we're discussing. Bissouma, like Lema, also has a year left on his contract. Though Brighton, I would suspect, because he's obviously play with several years of Premier League experience, they would look for 30 million. They might struggle to get takers at that, given obviously the potential court case hanging over his head. But nonetheless, I think that's what they'd be pushing for. And then Kone from Mönchengladbach is building up a bit of hype. So I think 20 million could snap him up. Tielemans is the box-to-box midfielder that was also touched on by Dan. He also has a year left on his contract. He is valued at 35 million. So if we went back to last summer, I think that Leicester wouldn't have entertained any bids below 50 million. But obviously with a year left, we're looking at around 35. Now moving on to the DMs. Onana of Lille. He's only 20 years old and he is valued at £12 million. And Doucouré of Lens is also valued at £12 million, age just 22. He has 2 years left on his contract though. Bordeaux's Onana is valued slightly less at £10 million. Age profile is good at 22. Kamara of Salzburg, he is valued also at £10 million. He's represented by Sports 360, who again is one of the bigger agencies out there. Sangare is valued at 15 million. He had quite a strong season for PSV and also is a player with several years of top flight experience. So his valuation is slightly higher. And then how do you pronounce it? Benacer? That player would be valued at 25 million. Obviously, has had a good season for the new Serie A champions, AC Milan. Though the only question mark I'd have is his injury history. He did spend quite a bit of time out injured in the 2021 season. Not so bad in the most recently completed season, but that would be my only question mark around him.
Thank you, Mo. Bissouma's out. I don't even want to discuss it. It's just doesn't pass the dickhead test, unfortunately. Even just having it, I mean, you know, he's not guilty yet, but just even if it's got there, to be honest, I don't even think we go there.
Well, we don't know where it is. Like, the thing is, he was arrested in a nightclub in Brighton on suspicion of sexual assault, but there's been nothing really said about it since then, so who knows what the legal situation is.
Exactly, I think we just steer clear, because just buying a player with that over the head, if it was all sorted, Dave, and, you know...
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I think yeah, you can go for him, you know, if it was that way, but, you know, just you got to be careful with all the Mendy stuff that's happened, and, you know, just it's you just have to be careful. I think we just... err of the side, you know, on the side of caution, really, more than anything. Whilst these things are going on, we, you know, we got our fan base and we have our own principles as well as people and football. And if we were, and you know, we're trying to pretend to be the owners and the manager, and him, I think they would be the same, you know. there's something just put in the chat that made me laugh. Sorry, it's supposed to be very serious, but anyway, thanks, mate. Here, Nick. However, say your name. But Pat, should I say Pat? Sorry about that, Pat. Yeah. Okay. So, which way are we edging here? I mean, Kone sounds like somebody. I want to go for one of each. If Because obviously what you've all pointed out to me is that we can't, there's not one person that replaces Tchouaméni, and that's the problem. And so I would go for two. And I know, Mo, you've said about the, you know, overseas. I think there's going to be plenty of ins and outs, really, for that to you know, we're going to be okay, I think. We're going to be okay.
If we consider it like this, Adrian didn't play a single game this season. He can be re-signed as the training goalkeeper and just not registered in the same way Karius was at the club this year and just not registered. And our, you know, three goalkeepers, if we need a third one, could be Pitaluga, who's under the age where he classifies as either and will eventually become a homegrown player. Kelleher and Alisson, obviously. So Adrian is one. If Taki goes, I think we've just got his replacement in Carvalho, not in terms of a similar player, but in terms of who gets his minutes. Now, he'll get more minutes, I think, than Taki. He may also be the one that swallows up Divock's minutes next year, Carvalho. So with those two going and Carvalho coming in, he doesn't actually affect the quota either way because he's under the age, but he will become a homegrown player when he turns 21. So I don't think we actually need to worry about the quota all that much. It may be a case where we only have a registered squad of 22, 23, but then we have Curtis, Rhys, Harvey, and Carvalho all playing varying minutes. Rhys would play minimal minutes, obviously. The other three could play quite a lot of minutes, and none of them would be registered as homegrown, but all would be homegrown players.
Yep, I agree. So not, no worries there.
Yeah, but he doesn't count yet. That's the thing. Because
until he's 21, yeah, the kids in it. How old's no? Jones is going to count now. Yeah, 21.
Yeah. No, you have to be 21. The rule is funny. Somebody pointed out to me the other day. You have to be 21 by the January of the season it starts, and Curtis doesn't count. Curtis will be 21 when the season starts, but he won't have been 21 in the January.
Yeah. Oh, he's 21 already, right?
So he still counts as academy, so he's unlimited.
Yeah, he'll be still academy next season, so we don't have to register him.
Right, okay. Right, because he turned 21 in Jan, basically. So if he had turned Curtis, in December, he would have...
Something would have along those lines, yeah. Something bizarre. Right. I'm not
That's a bit
sure
bad. He's 30 days too late, mate. Bloody hell.
Basically, anyway. Yeah.
right, so budget-wise... see, I didn't really go to budget because I have a few assumptions. We're loaded right now, but we'll get the official numbers from Mo. And also, the numbers we've put here haven't really frightened me in terms of, whoa, that's expensive. A lot of people coming to the end of the contract, a lot of people unproven, you know. But Mo, we are going to earn... Because we know we're in the last game of the season, no matter what. It's a 4 million here or there if we win the final or not. But we're going to earn a truckload this season. It's guaranteed to be 260 million plus just from TV. Just from TV. Just TV, guys. 260 million. We didn't used to earn that in a full year of everything in the past. That's not counting any commercial revenue. 260 million plus. Whew.
Yeah, I mean, it was about a few weeks ago that I tweeted out that I estimated Liverpool on track to earn 580 million for this complete, well, we haven't even completed the season, but the 21-22 season. But I think it's possible that that figure might start to slightly increase further still, and could sneak up towards 590 to 600 million, which is an increase on last year's turnover by in excess of £100 million. So that is absolutely staggering. So if we're talking about what available funds there are, there is huge amounts of funds available. I mean, we're talking before we even have to think about selling players and raising proceeds from player sales. Comfortably, in a conservative estimate, we're talking 120 million. Now, bear in mind that when we sign players, fees are almost always paid in instalments. So, 120 million, you know, as a general rule of thumb, will equate to about a £40 million outlay this summer. So, if we've generated £100 million more than we did last season. And granted, the wage bill will be higher because obviously we've got to the Champions League final. Bonuses for wins, goals and all the rest of it will be significant. But nonetheless, you know, we would have budgeted for a fair amount less, several tens of millions less than we've actually generated this season. So, we are swimming in money, literally. And as you mentioned earlier, it really shouldn't be a major concern. So we're talking 120 million, and that's conservative. If we had to go higher than that, then it really shouldn't cause a problem. And you just have to look at an Arsenal, for example, who last season spent about 150 million in the summer 21 window. And this is a club that failed to make Europe.
Is that net or before?
No, that was gross. But they didn't generate huge amounts from sales. So I think their net from memory was around 90 to 100 million, maybe even more than that. And this is a club that had turnovers significantly below what we had last season. And that number was a good couple hundred million below what we would have achieved this season. So, you know, and this in Arsenal is not a club that goes out and spends in a reckless way like an Everton, for example. So, we are in a very comfortable position. And as you say, it shouldn't really be a major concern.
Arsenal's net spend last summer was 115 million.
Fucking, and you know, Liverpool don't do things like that. They just don't. Unless it's time. And Darth, we talk about this a lot. I mean, I mention it a lot, but you talked about it. I kind of learned it from when you used to talk about it a lot. We have cycles in the way we do transfers. The evidence is now building as there's more time that goes on as a successful club. We are now at a point of a cycle where 2018, everybody's paid off in this cycle. You know, the amortization, everything. Those players that came and joined in 2018, the legendary team that has gone on to become this super team, with the VVD, starting with the VVD and Alisson, Keita, Fabinho, Shaqiri, the signings that came. And obviously, there's still more that came afterwards with Thiago, Jota and others. Kanate, obviously. Now, but those main ones in that 2018 summer, shall we say, January and summer, we're ready now to do that kind of investment again. At that time, we needed that cash influx from a Coutinho sale. I don't think we need that anymore, Darth. So we don't really need to do that.
Although, one thing to always look out for is that players who have been largely paid off and their book values, who could have good sale value and therefore could generate a large amount of profit. That's a nice little trick, isn't it, Mo? Sometimes you like to pull out.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that in the second part of this podcast, which becomes more of a what-if podcast. But
yeah,
I think what we want to do is discuss who we want to buy out of the two categories.
Are we all agreed that the priority is to pay up to 80 million for Tchouaméni?
Yes, 100%. 100%. Yeah. Because if one player can fill two roles like he can, and also he ticks all the boxes. We talk about Klopp loving height in his team. We talk about all those things where there's also, you know, evidence that a taller team is going to do better. Like something else that Dave said about having someone like a Tchouaméni forces clubs to go out wide. We're happy for them to cross in. We've got beasts in the box to head it out. They're going to win the ball, all of them. You know, in the air, they're all amazing. Kanate.
We've also got fullbacks that are very good at blocking crosses as well.
Yeah,
which plays into our hands. Tchouaméni is one of one. There is one of him, and there isn't another one to be found anywhere on the market. And he reminds me very much of when we went for Virgil. And everybody said, there's no way we'll pay that type of money. There's no way we want to pay that type of money. If there is one of him, and there is only one, we will pay the money. The question will be, will he decide to join us? I think we have everything in place from our end. Wages, bonuses, signing bonuses, agent fees, etc., etc., etc. I think we're happy to pay the fee that Monaco are looking for. The question will be, will his head get turned by either PSG and the possibility of linking up with Mbappe, and obviously the big truckload of cash that they'll throw at him as well, or going to Real Madrid. If he makes a footballing decision, if he based on where the best move for him is, he joins us. He would start for both us and PSG. He doesn't start at Real Madrid because he's not going to play as an eight in their system. And in all likelihood, Casemiro's not going anywhere for a couple of years. And we know how stubborn Real have been at moving on Modric and Cruz, even though Valverde and Camavinga have outperformed both of them this season. But Camavinga's minutes dropped by half from what he'd been putting forward at Rennes. Half this season at Real, despite Real playing more games than Rennes do. So if Tchouaméni wants to make a footballing decision, he joins us. Obviously, he'd start at PSG, but the situation at PSG, that's not a football club. That's a science experiment or something. You join Liverpool on a five-year deal. You can still go to Real Madrid in 5 years, 4 years. And the thing is, if you join Liverpool now, you know Jurgen Klopp is locked in for the next 4 years. You go to PSG, God knows how many managers they'll have in that time. Go to Real Madrid, God knows how many they'll have in that time. Since Klopp took over at Liverpool, Real have had four or five different managers. Zidane twice, Solari, and Carlo. And Lopetegui, so five. Since Klopp took over at Liverpool, they've had five managers. Go back the last 10 years, they've had eight managers, we've had four. And two of ours were always short-term things, Hodgson and Kenny. That is not a club where there's long-term stability. It's also not a club that develops players very well. Look back over the last 20 years, and outside of Sergio Ramos, who went from being a really promising right-back to the most overrated centre-back the game has ever seen, and Raphael Varane, who developed from a young centre-back into, at his peak, probably one of the five best centre-backs on the planet before he fell off. Outside of those two, who have they developed in the last 20 years? Marcelo, maybe, but he was a really good player when he joined them. Casemiro, the only knock on him was ever, he's not quite right in the head. He's still not quite right in the head, but his talent has shone through. But loads of players have gone there, from Luka Jovic and Hakimi and Theo Hernandez and others, and never been given an opportunity. Look at Martin Odegaard. Super talented player, went to Real, stagnated, and had to get himself out on loan to develop. Real don't develop players well. Camavinga's not as good as he was last year. He's still excellent, but he's not as good as he was last year. Valverde hasn't kicked on in the last 18 months. If he wants to make the right footballing decision, he joins us. If he wants to stay home in France and be part of, you know, Mbappe's inner circle, he goes to PSG. If he wants whatever it is that Real Madrid can offer, big bag of money and the prestige of playing for Real Madrid, that's where he goes. But if it's a footballing decision, Liverpool is the clear choice for him. And he is one of one. There is no getting another version of him.
Yeah,
you have to find another plan.
And that's what we pieced together just there. So I think that's clear.
We signed. Yeah. We had Camavinga, didn't we, on this pod as well?
And you know, he makes a massive difference for them when he comes on Real Madrid. You can see the quality oozing out of that player.
There's been multiple reports this season that he's already fed up and wants to leave because he's not getting his games. Now, he's played a lot more since Christmas than he did pre-Christmas, but multiple reports that he's not happy, and they're from fairly reliable French journalists who would have access to him and his inner circle, that he's not happy at Real Madrid and regrets going there.
So, I mean, I think we can agree that this is our pod to make these decisions. So we can say that this is our plan A, and Jürgen's going to fly him to Blackpool and then convince him to sign, right?
That's plan A. Plan A has to be him.
Well, yeah, there's rumours that's already happened. Anyway, but we're, look, at the end of the day, it's the kid's choice. It's the kid's choice now, right?
Yeah.
No, it was a bit closer to home than Blackpool, but there was tunnels and stuff that you had to go through. But yeah, we know where that is now. So point is, it's up to the kid now, right? So we're going to make an assumption here, a couple of assumptions here. One, if you know, he did decide he's number one choice. He's absolutely number one choice, as we've all put. He's number one choice. He would be signed no matter what. We wouldn't even look at anyone else. But we're doing a what if scenario today. What if he joins?
In terms of the budget, we're gonna factor aside 70 million for him. Yeah.
Yes, that's fine. And you know, 10 million add-ons is fine, right? That's cool. So we've got 70 million to play with for two players to replace him because midfield is a particular concern for me. Whereas we have already injury-prone players in the team, and yes, Zone 7, you know, the software we're using and, you know, everything that's going with it has been wonderful. But as you've seen towards the end of the season, if you want to go for everything, you know, you're going to need to have options so that, or you need to manage the squad better early on in the season so that we don't get to a point where everybody's falling apart in the last two games when it's really, really serious and, you know, you can push on to win a title.
So we assume, you know, do we also assume then that Milner's not being renewed?
Hopefully.
This is our decision.
So I want to keep it as realistic as possible, and I think judging by what Klopp said the other day, where he said the only person leaving as of now is Divock. For as we know, you know, I don't know. I don't think he is. You know, I think he's going to end up, because there was no like Mark's just said there in the chat. There was no send off. There would have been a send off if Milner was going. 100% would have got a.
It doesn't mean he's going to get a contract.
Would Milner want that though? Like, would Milner want a send off? I don't think.
It's not about him wanting it. It's about.
Of course it is. Yeah, but of course it is. If Milner, look, Milner is the most uncomfortable person in the world when the spotlight is on him. And all of the spotlight of Anfield was on Divock, and Divock loves that type of thing. I don't know that Milner would like that. The other thing I'd say is Divock has already signed for someone else. Milner hasn't. So Milner's still basically a free agent come the summer. Divock wasn't. Divock signed for Milan weeks ago. So that's as when Klopp says as the only person definitely leaving is Divock, that's because Divock has signed for somebody else.
Give it a month, he'll be unattached, won't he?
But Darth, it doesn't matter. Milner's minutes are going down every single year.
Yeah, but a point is
whether he stays or not. Point is, it's not gonna compete with a new midfielder or two midfielders.
Should we just say we assume he's not renewing?
Okay, because he hasn't renewed yet. I think it's safer to say he's not renewing. Yep. Because we haven't heard
either way.
Free
things up on the wage bill as well. So.
Okay.
Yeah, it's 160 grand this year.
I don't think these two new players affect the wage bill that much in comparison, though, just because of the profiles of them. Don't think we're going for... Does that make sense, Mo, or no?
Yeah, it does, yeah. I mean, Milner obviously is...
Divock covers them? Divock covers them with his six figures.
Yes, but Milner covers this new contract for Salah, is the point. The difference between what Mo earns now and what Mo wants is basically what James Milner currently earns. The difference between 200 grand and 350 is James Milner.
Yeah, we are loaded now, Dave. We can afford both.
So
it's okay.
So Milner was basically sixth in the rotation, wasn't he?
Exactly.
With alongside Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, you're looking for somebody to be at. So Tchouameni would come into the rotation higher up the pecking order than that. But as a bare minimum, we're going to need somebody to come in into the.
You know. I think he'd go higher than Keita. That's the level of the player.
Ideally, when you sign players, you ideally want to sign somebody who's better than all the other players you currently.
Yeah, if you sign Tchouameni, he's above everybody bar Fabinho and Thiago. Like, he's a starter from day one. And Naby and Henderson become sort of the rotation starters. But your first choice three are Tchouameni, Fabinho and Thiago. Hmm. And then Henderson and Naby become the spot starters of the rotation. And then the rest, Harvey, Milner, Curtis, and if we sign whatever else, they're like your rotational players who you bring in for cup games and, you know, for league games against the dross or the dead rubber in the Champions League, and they, you know, come off the bench and fill minutes that way. But you basically want five starters, and we've got four at the moment.
In the Premier League,
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, so the boring choice, obviously, Gags, is Konrad Lehmer again, but we already did that in January, so we should do some variety because, you know, we bought him then in January to cover Trent. To play the Milner replacement is a utility player in midfield.
So what are your recommendations, Darth, from a numbers point of view?
Well, I'd say if we wanted somebody other than Lehmer, because we've done it before, then Kone, but also Tielemans because of the proven Premier League, proven attacking quality. And he basically would give a good if you had him on the left with Thiago, you basically hopefully preserve Thiago from having any injury problems next year. And then Naby can play, focus on the right eight role, where he can play equally well.
But I need a six as well.
Well,
I
want someone to if we look at it this way? If we were to sign Kone and Youri Tielemans, then Thiago and Tielemans on the left, Kone and Naby on the right, Fabinho and Brian as the sixes.
Can Kone play the, cover the six for Gladbach?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Kone can play the six.
So as long as Kone is, you know, multi, you know, he's a utility player and he can play multiple positions. I think the mistake, the only mistake I could see would be buying somebody who could only play one position.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. And
like, Dell is saying he's not sold on Tielemans after this season. That's nonsense. First of all, Tielemans has actually had an okay season. Secondly, last year he was one of the best midfielders in the Premier League. The year before, he was one of the best midfielders in the Premier League. If we start writing players off after one season, we'd be writing off half the league. Yeah, like, it's just, it's a silly thing to do. Also, Youri Tielemans is a very, very, very good player.
But also, and Dave, is that he has been playing Brendan ball. And Brendan,
well, that's the thing. Like,
Brendan's second season ball.
Brendan makes everybody worse eventually because they just get sick of listening to him. And Leicester have been a train wreck this season. Like, Youri Tielemans has had to play as the holding midfielder in a bunch of games this season. Like, that's like putting Milner at centre-back. It's just, it's nonsensical, especially when you have other options, as Brendan has had. I think you bring in Kone. Tielemans, you know, is good enough to be a starter for us. Whether it's an every-game starter or a rotational starter, he's good enough. Kone is the guy who could come in and be a real difference-maker. He could be the one that comes in and develops and explodes and becomes a foundational piece of the team. So, Kone makes sense to me. And if you bring in Tielemans and Curtis Jones, and we should send them some, and most of them as starts. So, Thiago and Tielemans, Milner and Harvey, and that's your eight-man midfield.
With Lema gags, I mean, if we're definitely signing Ramsey from Aberdeen, then the case for Lema does get less strong because you're looking for that because he could cover Trent as well.
Mm.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's just going to be too many. But what I need to know from Mo, can you remind me of the... Yeah, I think so. Can you remind me of the damage, Mo, of Kone and Tielemans, please? Both prospective wage and also fee.
Sure. So, certainly with Tielemans, we're looking at a fee of 35 million, only a year left on his contract with Leicester. Kone, 20 million should secure him from Borussia Mönchengladbach. In terms of wages, Tielemans. Correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, but I think with Leicester, he's probably in the region of about 60,000 a week.
I think he's on 80. I think they broke their wage structure for the second time after Vardy to give, because obviously he came from Monaco. He'd been at Anderlecht. He was like this highly sought after prize. Monaco got him, gave him a big wage, didn't really work, went on loan to Leicester. And I think for Leicester to convince them, they had to give him, I think it's about 80 grand a week.
Right, okay. So he wouldn't come for less than that. So we were probably looking at, pretty much Divock wages going on Tielemans. Whereas with Kone, he's young. He only signed his last contract, I think, a year ago, maybe 2 years ago. It won't be for much. It's probably only about 10 to 15,000 a week at most. So I think 20 to 25,000 to begin with for what would be a squad player. Should be ample to get his agents to agree to a deal. So I think all told between the two, we're looking at around 100 to 110,000 a week for the two players.
Can I ask a question on Ramsey, right? So if Milner's going, Ramsey is signing. I assume that Nico is being sold, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Right? But so Ramsey is 18. So if anything happens to Trent, you all of a sudden you have just got an 18-year-old.
Milner.
The more we go through it, it's probably worth keeping Milner for a year.
It probably is worth keeping Gomez.
Gomez will be the primary backup at right back next season, regardless. Because the only way we keep Gomez, and we'll get into it obviously, is he's going to have to get more minutes. Like, he's not going to stay for another season like what he's just had. So I think Gomez will play a bit more at right back next season, and then Ramsey will just be allowed to develop behind him. But it probably is worth keeping Milner for the sole purpose of loaning out Curtis Jones. It's probably worth keeping Milner and letting Curtis go and get his...
If you're signing two midfielders, right, and, you know, you see, I'd forgotten about Gomez in terms of covering the right back as well. So, you know, I don't think you need to keep Milner. You don't think you need to renew him if you're signing. If we're definitely signing two players.
Remember, we're losing Ox. I think we need one as things stand. Ox is gone.
We haven't done this. The definite outs. Who's the definite outs, boss?
Ox, Nico, Nat, Taki, Divock. That's it. Gomez is not going anywhere.
Gomez on the what if list.
Yeah, so we are already an hour in, guys, so this is crazy.
We'll run through the what-ifs, but are we all agreed then on Kone and Tielemans? I think the wages will be a bit higher than what Mo said. But
I think so too, because I've just read somewhere that he might already be on 100k plus, Tielemans.
Tielemans is getting 120k without question wherever he goes.
Yeah.
Like, it's fantasy to suggest he'll get anything less than that.
Yeah, I reckon 150.
And Kone is going to come in on probably 30. So you could say 150 grand between the two of them. That's basically Divock and Taki's wages combined. Done.
Yeah. Ox as well. They're all on decent wages, you know. They're all on decent
Ox
wages.
Ox on big money.
Yeah, Nat's on big money too. So honestly, it's a joke. So anyway, let's move on to the what if then, Dave. We've got the major conundrums coming up this summer is that we have the legendary front three all coming up for renewal. We love them. We absolutely love them. There's times
here. Let's do the easier two first, Gag. So the easier two are left back and centre back. So left back is if Costas leaves. Now, the only scenario I think that Costas would leave is someone offers us massive money, like an offer we can't say no to, like 35 million or something. I think he's more than happy to stay another year.
Yeah,
I think he's absolutely in love with the place. So it's only if someone offers us a big pile of money for him. The three I've got are Aaron Hickey of Bologna, Scottish left back, was in Hearts Academy, really, really promising. Like what you'd imagine a Scottish Joe Cancelo to be. Doesn't have the flair, but two-footed, can play a bit in midfield, likes to come in field and be part of the build-up play. Owen Window, AZ Alkmaar, just a really good nuts and bolts left back, good going forward. And Jamal Lewis, who I just think could be a bit of a bargain, and we know we've liked him in the past. And he's definitely on the outs at Newcastle. Now, he is coming back from a quad injury, so that could be a concern. But they'd be the three there. And centre-back then is Joey Gomez. And again, I think it's more if we get a massive offer. There's probably a possibility Joe could ask to go. But the three I've got there are Maxence Lacroix, Edmund Topsapa, and David Carmo. They'd be the three I'd go for. They all fit the profile of what we look for in centre-backs. Big, dominant, quick, and in Carmo's case, he's left-footed, so it would give us a bit of balance.
So, from my point of view, I don't think either are going to go anywhere.
Neither do I.
Are you going to put your foot down, boss, and say...
they're not going. They're not.
You're not keeping unhappy players, though. So if Gomez asks to leave, you know Klopp is going to allow.
Yeah, but because it's all about assumptions, Gomez is very happy and understood that his first year back from an absolutely nightmare of an injury was going to be rough in and out. And, you know, at the end of the season, he did have a couple of really good performances that, and a good pre-season now, a proper pre-season, because last year's pre-season wasn't really a pre-season for him. He was just literally starting to run, you know. So this pre-season is going to really get him back into that back four fight and then also cover for Trent when we need it. So, yeah, I can see him playing a lot more games, you know, next year. And I can also see Virgil being managed a little bit better next year, just after what happened at the end of this. So not being played for games where he's literally not always needed. You know, obviously the big games, 100%, every Champions League game, and, you know, top half table, whatever, fine. But some of the dross, Konate can cover and just give those legs a bit of a rest. So, and, you know, play Konate and Gomez, things like that.
How can Konate play with Gomez when he'll be starting next to Virgil? Matip and Gomez will be the back.
Yeah, Matip and Gomez, you know what I mean. Either way, you know, there's going to be rotation. So that's guaranteed. So let's move on, Dave. And let's go to the next batch of what-ifs.
Right, so we'll start with the Bobby situation. Bobby is... Bobby's the one of the front three who I think is probably easiest to do a new contract with, because I think he'd do a shorter term deal. I don't think he'll be looking for a raise in money. I think he's one that we could run into the ground for the next couple of years, and he probably doesn't have a whole lot of value on the transfer market. But if he wants to go and be a starter somewhere and he's not happy being like the fifth choice attacker, which is what he is now at Liverpool, then perhaps he moves on. Now, I had done a list of four, but one of them was Adam Plazek, and I get the feeling he is going to to Bayer Leverkusen. So he's one, Adam Plazek of Sparta Prague. The other three then I've got are Brian Brobbey of RB Leipzig, currently on loan at Ajax. He's a bustly kind of all-action forward. Really like how he carries the ball, can play centrally, can play wide. Powerful player. He'd be third on my list. The top two are João Pedro of Watford, who I just really like. I think he's got a massive ceiling. I think he's the type of player that can really be developed into a Bobby type of false nine. And then my top choice is Charles de Catelier from Club Bruges, who reminds me really strongly of Kai Havertz. That same sort of tall, upright, composed player, great touch, great technical ability, can play as a false nine or as an out-and-out nine if need be. He's like a cross between Havertz and Patrick Schick, that sort of build. He's better built than Kai, stronger. Can play wide, can play as a 10, massive talent. He'd be my top pick, then João Pedro, and then Brobbey, because I do think Klozek is off the radar now with the Leverkusen thing.
Okay, let's go to the numbers, Darth.
Yes, so I really like the two players that Dave has listed, both of them, De Ketelaere and João Pedro. Now, both of them are really good. De Ketelaere is only 21, and João Pedro is only 20. Now, Pedro... The only real weaknesses is in putting the ball in the back of the net. But he's 20, and that's going to come. He's got 5.4 dribbles a game per 90 in his last two seasons. 52% completion. That is really, really standout compared to all these other forwards. And there's other forwards on these other lists as well for Dave, as well. And his off ball defensive work also very good. Tackles, interceptions, blocks in terms of his in the attacking half as well. De Ketelaere, this might be a product of his team and he plays, but he's a pressing monster in terms of that false nine position. 95th percentile for presses in Europe as well. So he again, his weakness is the putting the ball in the back of the net thing. But in terms of the actual finishing. The only one I would say to Dave is, I know he's on the other list as well for the other players, but Christopher Nkunku, right? If we're talking about the Bobby role...
He's the one. The only reason I went with this list was more a sort of money out versus money in thing.
Yeah.
So I was sort of looking at, like, what's the maximum we get for Bobby? I think it's probably 25 million.
Yeah.
So that's why Nkunku's on the other list, even though I would be looking at him more in that sort of as a Bobby Sadio false nine kind of hybrid type.
Because The reason I'm just mentioning Nkunku now, is, I agree with the rationale about the money in, money out, is that one of the things that we've said on the Under Pressure a lot is that with the thing that Jota and Sadio both lack compared to Bobby in that role is build up. They're both better getting on the end of things than Bobby was. But in terms of the build up and the learning the pressing roles, maybe not quite as good as Bobby was, but at peak. But the weaknesses were in build up. Now, of all the players they've listed, Nkunku is by far the best in build up off the ball and his creativity, as well as being an astonishingly good finisher as well, and goal scorer. So in terms of that role, in terms of if you still envisage playing front three with two very, very high wide attacking forwards, Diaz, Mo, you know, those kind of positions, with a slightly deeper nine, if we're looking for that more creative side of things, then Nkunku is the pick. He's the absolute standout. But João Pedro does, and Ketelaere both have a lot to like. I mean, obviously João Pedro is relegated, but he is part of the Watford factory, isn't he? What's it called, the dynasty, the family who own them.
The Pozzos,
yeah. He is part of their factory, so, you know, he's probably going to get sold on. But in terms of us picking up relegated talent, best players from, he would fit that bill as well. Mm. As Dave said, he's got a lot
this
of...
This Ketelaere is tall, man.
Yeah, he's a big, big unit. Like I say, he's like, plays like Kai, but he's built like Patrick Schick. He is a proper unit. Yeah, I mean, I really like him. I think he could fit really well. Like Dan's, like, look, the choice would be Nkunku, but he's obviously on the Sadio list. But if we were buying someone with the Bobby money, De Ketelaere would be probably my top choice. But I do love João Pedro. There's just something about him, the way he goes about how he plays. I think there's huge potential. Like, he could end up being sold to Udinese for 25p in a bag of footballs because that's how that family works. But if we could steal him, he'd be something else to get. And he knows the league already, which is a promising thing.
But, I mean, while you're talking about him, I'm watching videos. The touch for this guy, for this big guy, the touch he's got. Jesus. Technically sound. Proper, really, you know, just some video analysis. I know it's only YouTube, but he is...
With De Ketelaere, we may struggle with the Brexit rules. May.
Right.
May. De Ketelaere.
Yeah. He's not international, is he? Or is he?
He is, I believe. I believe he is. Let me just... I'm almost certain he's got at least a cap. He has six caps and one goal over the last 20 months or so.
That would help then a lot. If he's got
and he's played in Champions League as well, as Ash said just now. So, yeah, it would help. I mean... He looks good. I like him. I really like him. Mo, numbers on this one in terms of monies?
Okay, so if we start with the centre-backs to begin with.
No, don't even bother, because Gags has made the decision that Joe has been locked up under lock and key, and Costas is far too happy to leave. So just do the forwards. And
you know why as well, though? Because we need to focus on midfield and these forwards this summer. We just do. Okay. We're okay at the moment. The back, just the right back, really. But everything else, we need to sort. Yeah, go on. Sorry, man.
Okay. So, right. Well, in terms of a potential Bobby replacement, João Pedro, I have valued at 15 million. Obviously, young player, started to get more minutes under the Hodge towards the end of the season, but still was a peripheral player overall for Watford. And obviously, they've been relegated as well. And Watford and the Pozzo family are all about bringing players in and then moving them on. And I think 15 million would be enough to convince them to part ways with him. Brian Boby, I have valued at £12 million. I think that would be enough to prize him away from Leipzig. Though his agent was the late Mino Raiola. So that agency hasn't disappeared just because he himself has passed away. So, you know, there would likely be a premium in terms of agents' fees were we to go in for him. De Ketelaere, is a player that is the highest touted of those players. So his value would be 25 million. Bruges have sold players at a kind of premium for a Belgian club, notably Wesley only in 2019 to Aston Villa for about 20 million. So, he is one of their star players now. And so I think 25 million would be what they would be looking for him. So clearly more expensive than the others, but the upside is, he seems to have the greatest potential of the players that we've talked about. And if he wanted to be in gazumping mode, I had valued Adam Lozic at 18 million as well.
The one thing to say is we do have a decent relationship with Club Bruges from when we sold them Mignolet. We did them a bit of a favour on that deal. So there could be a decent relationship to tap into there. I had forgotten that Broby was a Mino client, and based on the numbers going around as to what they got out of the Haaland deal, I still don't know that I'd want any part of a Raiola client.
No, I'm absolutely sold on Charles, to be honest. Just having a name like Charles in team's hilarious.
Mm. But the thing is with him as well is like he could play as the 9, he can play as a 10 in a 4-2-3-1, he can play off the right in a 4-2-3-1 as well. So you're getting a guy that could just be a really valuable player to have in the squad who can play multiple positions. He's played as an 8 before as well, so you could drop him in there if you were stuck and needed somebody. I think he's got pretty much everything you'd want in a player. He's really intelligent as well. Like, super intelligent. This kid was going to be a solicitor if he hadn't become a professional footballer. He was actually at university to become a solicitor. So this is a super intelligent kid.
Yeah, I like that as well. Yeah, he's my choice. If Bobby was to leave, the what-if situation, I would like to bring a young player like this guy in. Also, again,
at least Bobby contingency. Yeah.
Yeah, and also, it's just another thing about the height. I love that we just become a huge team. It's literally unbeatable sometimes.
It's a really underrated thing, isn't it, Gary?
It is. I remember watching that Leicester team, right? They just had two big lugs of centre back doing it, and they were fine with it, But yeah. I mean, we would have quality
miniatures when we were under Brodge, when we had our team of minis.
Oh my god, it was terrible, wasn't it? And you just get dominated in the middle of the park, and that spine is all tall. The start of it. Just imagine how you scare the opposition, intimidate them even before you start. It's just one of those things. It happens to some, and maybe that doesn't happen as much, but I think it does. Anyway, Mane, Dave. Let's go to Mane next.
Yeah, okay. So, Sadio has obviously been playing the number 9 position. I think he's probably, if he sticks about, that's probably his primary position moving forward. I think Carvalho is most likely to become the alternative to Diaz on the left. So, I think Sadio will play most of his games through the middle. So I've looked at this from two angles. Do we want someone who is that sort of, non-traditional striker, that false 9-ish type player who can drop off and, as Dan said, be involved in the build-up play? Do we want an out-and-out 9? Do we want to change a little bit and go for that focal point in attack? So I've got basically two options for each. The two non-traditional 9s would be Nkunku, who Dan has mentioned is just off the charts. He's been utterly ridiculous this season. Sensational footballer, can do everything, can play pretty much everywhere as well. Started off as a midfielder, can play as an 8, can play as a 10, can play both wings, can play up front.
Basically,
whatever you want him to be.
On the weekend as well.
Yeah. And the thing with him is he's a big game player. Like, he turns up in big games. He's got the right mentality. He's the type of guy who could have stuck about at PSG. Yeah, he's got pace. He's an incredible dribbler. But what I love about him is he could have stuck at PSG and been happy enough to just, be a squad player, be Neymar's backup / kit man or whatever. But he would have played a ton, obviously, because Neymar's only a part-time footballer. But he didn't want that. He forced his way out, forced his way to Leipzig to go and play every single game. He's adapted year after year to a different type of role, different position. He's on his third manager there now. He's excelled under each of them. Nkunku is sensational. If you want a non-traditional nine, he's I think, the one to go for. The other option I've got there is Arnaud Danjuma, who we have been linked with. Was at Bournemouth, didn't really impress in the Premier League, but did well in the Championship, went to Villarreal, started off like a house on fire this year. We obviously played against him in the Champions League in the first leg. He didn't impress, but that was more down to the fact that they never left their own half. He's a very good player. He's a bit like a Memphis Depay light. Can play wide, can play through the middle, good hold-up play. He's strong, he's quick. What his ceiling is, I don't know. I don't know how much more there is for him to go, but he is a good player, and he would be a fit, shall we say. And then I looked at sort of absolute nines, like proper number nines, guys that will lead the line, guys that will get you goals through the middle. The first one is Darwin Núñez, whose name has obviously done the rounds a few times. We know what Darwin's about. He's big, he's strong, he's quick. And carry the ball, he scores goals, he's not a particularly good passer of the football, but that's in large part down to who he's played with and what's been asked of him. I think that can be developed. But Darwin will get you goals no matter what team you put him into. My other option here is Victor Osimhen of Napoli. And I think he is the total package. I think he is bordering on being ready to absolutely ignite and just take off and bang in 30 goals a season for the next 6-7 years. Great in the air, great hold up play, presses like a demon, runs the channels, links play. He's got everything, absolutely everything. The only small little knock on him could be he's had a couple of injuries. They're only niggly injuries, but just something to keep an eye on. If we're looking for a traditional nine, he'd be my pick. If we're looking for a non-traditional nine, Nkunku would be the pick.
Darth, the numbers on these are exciting, very exciting.
Well, I mean, this is a quality shortlist here. In terms of actual output, all four are already doing it. They're all very, very close as well. In terms of their expected numbers, throw a blanket over them. It's like 0.03 difference between all four of them. So that's Nkunku, Núñez, Osimhen, and Danjuma. But what's interesting though is the profile by which they make those up, because as Dave said, Nkunku and Danjuma do have a lot more expected assists, chances created, key passes, that kind of stuff, gags. Whereas than the other two, so they're more balanced. They have a more balanced output rather than the other two, like Dave said, pure nines, which were not all scoring output, and shooting output. just a few other things on Osimhen. He's one of the few players in the whole of Europe that shoots more than Mo Salah, 3.8 shots per game, which is just astonishing. That's like Harry Kane back in the day levels, yeah. And Nkunku has got 4.8 shot creating actions per game. That is just incredible for his team. So basically, think about that, Gags. It's five shots or assists, five shots or key passes every match he's involved in himself. Which is fantastic. Their particular highlights of across these four players. Now, it's. Personally, I think Nkunku, because he can play in more than one position. But to be honest, it's much about what you want to say. There is not a weak candidate here. Maybe Danjuma is, people will turn their nose up at him because of his past, with Bournemouth. But his numbers, you can't argue with his profile.
Mm.
He's one of those ones where he's not sexy, Gags, but if you just look at, the process, what he does, it's very good.
Yeah, if I'm replacing Mario though, I'm going sexy. So, Mo, what's the figures like in terms of how much is going to cost me, dude, this?
Okay, so we're talking big numbers with these players then. Let's start with Danjuma. So he's
Firstly, before you do, how much are we getting in for Mane? Sorry.
Okay, well, we're not going to get in the same amount as we will for the players that we're going to talk about, with one exception, possibly. I mean, I think with Mane, we're probably talking around 60 million at best, probably 50 to 60. I'd be shocked if we get more than that from anyone. I mean, he's 30 years old. He's got only a year left on his contract. If we get 60 million, then Julian Ward has played an absolute blinder, who, of course, is a fellow colleague of ours. Now, with these four players, then, let's start with Danjuma. I value him at 45 million. So going back to what Dan was touching upon, perhaps not quite as sexy, as hyped up as some of the others. So I think 45 million would be enough to tempt Villarreal. With the other three, Nunez, obviously, is a player that we talked about back in the January transfer window, at which point I valued him at £40 million. But certainly in the second half of the season, his stock has only risen and risen considerably at a very appreciable rate. And there's clearly many suitors for his signature. And I think we'd be looking at probably in the region of £80 million for him, which does sound high, but I think Benfica will have plenty of offers in for him. And so I think they can easily drum up a bit of a bidding war for him and secure in the region of 80 for him. And this, by the way, is a club that managed to sell João Félix, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, to Atletico for about 115 to 120 million. So they know how to get good value for their prized assets. Victor Osimhen is a player that obviously has done well for Napoli. His numbers may not be quite as high as Nkunku or Nunez, though Napoli, don't forget, did pay with add-ons in the region of about £60 million to secure his signature a couple of years back. So they would certainly not look to sell him for less than that, given his stock has also increased. So I think we're looking at a minimum £70 million to tempt Napoli to sell, but it might even be more than that. And then Nkunku, obviously a Leipzig player, club that we have a good relationship with. I think that we'd be probably looking again at similar numbers to Nunez at £80 million to secure his signature, though he has got 2 years left on his contract. So now is the optimum time for Leipzig to sell the player. Also should be noted that Nkunku's agent is Pini Zahavi, who's one of the top super agents in the world. Though Zahavi is likely to cash in on the sale of Lewandowski, likely to Barcelona. So he's probably going, and that will be a free transfer because if I'm not mistaken, Dave.
He's got a year left.
Oh, he's got a year left. Right. Okay. But nonetheless, I think that there will still be a reasonable signing on bonus, even with a year left. Plus, I think Lewandowski is clearly the most high profile of all of his plays, even though Nkunku is clearly going to go for a higher transfer fee. So the point being, the fee we may have to pay for Zahavi if we sign Nkunku wouldn't be quite as high as if Nkunku was the only big deal that Zahavi was going to be making this summer. But I think overall, between Nunez and Nkunku, we're looking at a region of about £80 million.
All 80 million, which is fine if you're getting in 50, 60 for Mane, to be honest. You know, that makes sense, that level of investment. Wages-wise, what are you thinking?
So, none of these players will be on 100,000 a week or more at the moment. We certainly have in Nunez a player that, you know, he's only 22. His last contract extension was before he went into this really prolific spell. So he might be on with Benfica anywhere from 20 to 40,000. So, you know, he would be a player that nonetheless, though, with the size of transfer fee, would not agree to any wages which would be less than 100,000. I think probably
so it's an incredible raise, though, for him, isn't it? From what he's on.
Oh, it would be. It would be, but yeah, we certainly wouldn't be talking 200,000 a week to begin with, despite the transfer fee. So I think in the region of anywhere from 120,000 to 150,000, depending on how strong the agents are at negotiating the deal. Nunes, by the way, I should have mentioned, is represented by George Mendes, who we have, as you know, a very good relationship with. So, he's somebody we've dealt with and done good business with. So, again, that adds a bit more weight to making the deal there rather than with Nkunku.
Nowadays too, Mo, I feel. We do like
Poch. Yeah, we do, absolutely. And Nkunku, I think we'd be looking at a similar kind of wage of 120 to 150 a week to begin with. Obviously, we do pay significant sums in bonuses. So, you know, if we have a strong season next season, like this season, then with bonuses and add-ons, they'd be averaging, 250 to 300,000 a week with gold bonuses, win bonuses, etc.
Okay. So whilst, Darwin, we picked Darwin before for a reason, but the other two, I can't say his name, Osimhen just looks amazing. And obviously Nkunku is incredible, man. What I like about Nkunku is that he literally could become another Mo in our setup. You forget Mane, could become another Mo in the setup with the numbers he's putting up right now, and also just watching him creativity wise and goal scoring wise and strength. He's so strong as well. He's so strong. Like, just, yeah, he's just like a total package of a forward.
But with him coming through as well, he'll also drop back into midfield from the centre forward position to give like overloads, 4-on-2, 4-on-3 overloads for us. So that's one thing that he will do.
And his pressing's good as well.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's a coin toss between him and Osimhen. To be honest, it is.
Osimhen can only play one position though, right?
I know, and that's why I'm edging towards Nkunku, because I think having that flexibility in our forwards is ideal, really, for Klopp and the way Pep will probably want to go forward with the squad. The next evolution, might be that.
Unless he wants to play 4-2-3-1, and then you're future-proofing by getting Osimhen, you get your nine. If you don't, then you've still got to go and do that.
They're all the same, so it's
they're all in the same kind of money. Danjuma would be the cheaper one. What I would say is, we've obviously, the next thing to discuss is the Mo replacement, and that's another opportunity to get Nkunku.
Yeah, let's go with Osimhen, because I was just watching him as well, and the hang time, like, honestly, we haven't had anything like that in our team, like, for a long time. In fact, ever, probably. No one heads a ball like that, for us. And I think Dave put it in the chat when I mentioned it in the chat, because obviously we're on Discord, folks, anfieldinnews.com/Discord, is that, for the way we cross the ball, We sometimes go crazy at crossing, and if it finds someone's head like that, we've already got a Jota and a Mane who've done well, with crosses. But this guy could probably take it to another level.
He's very quick as well. Very quick.
Exactly. So I think Darth, you said maybe his passing, not the best, but when you've got a nine, I think we want a different type of nine. Yeah, what we have now is the guy, in terms of Bobby, completely different, where you do expect him to do that link up. But if we do evolve into a different place, or even if you want the option of being able to switch.
Well, I just think we've got to be sure, because we don't want to end up the situation where that Chelsea found themselves in, where they didn't need to buy Lukaku, because they were actually a better team with Havertz and playing 4-3-3, false nine. And they've now stuck with somebody who doesn't suit them, and they can't get the best out of. And I guess we're thinking about, I know we always like to have options and stuff, but I'm just saying, I guess think we need to be careful. It's 4-3-3. It's the system. And if he can only play one role. If we're sure we're going to keep playing him at centre forward in the 4-3-3, fine. Yeah. But we need to mitigate that with more build up from the wide forwards and the 2-8s.
Darth, I'd counter this point with Darwin, because we've gone for Darwin in the past, and apparently his link-up isn't the best or as good as what we have in the team currently either. and his passing. So if we're, you know, if we were willing to do it then, then
Sam's not in the chat anymore. It's a shame. Sam had a Darwin radar, and his like passing was basically non-existent.
Yeah, so if it's worse than Jota's, and we're already going mad at Jota all the time about it, then it doesn't.
Like Sadio's build-up play is not particularly good either. Like, what's he got? One assist this season. Like, he's a bit of a black hole with a first touch like a curb as well. So, you know, it is just sort of Bobby who does that.
Like a curb.
Kick it to him and it comes straight back to you.
Kirby, it's a game of Kirby, perfect.
And Mo, but if you play Jota centre forward, you have to mitigate it by Mo being the deepest at the three forwards to provide the creativity.
Let's go with him, Dave.
Yeah, Sean just said the same in the chat. Mo is the creative link in that situation. Mm. With a 9-9. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's done. Right. I think this is an easy one for Mo, mate. I've already made my decision. I don't even have to go through the book, but you can.
Well, I'm going to go through them anyway because I've done the list. I've taken time to do it.
know who I want now. You've sold it already.
the two I put forward were Rafinha. Obviously, he's been linked in the past. We know he's a really good player, and Oyarzabal. Oyarzabal's a really good, really intelligent player from Real Sociedad. Can play both sides. He has some versatility to his game. He's a really clever player, and he gets goals. But I think Nkunku would be the top pick here because he can play right. He can also play left, and Diaz can come across and play right. We've seen Diaz play right side this year and be really good. I think Nkunku's ability to be flexible is massive, and he can play in a multitude of positions. And if Sadio were the one who stayed and Mo left, then Nkunku in on the right and him and Sadio being able to switch positions is something we could look at as well. We've seen this season when Jota played right, Sadio central and Diaz off the left, Sadio and Jota switched a couple of times. So Nkunku, I think, would be the go here. He's obviously the most expensive of them, but he is the best of them. I do love Rafinha. I think he's a wonderful player. But if you're replacing Mo, I think you're looking mostly to replace the creativity, but you also need the goals. And I think Nkunku gives you the best balance of everything. Now, obviously, he's right-footed rather than left, so he'd play it slightly narrower than Mo does, but I do think Nkunku is the pick here.
So, I agree with that Nkunku is the best one on the list. However, Gags.
Go on, then.
There's one thing that hasn't been mentioned at all yet, is that Mo is left-footed coming off the right. It's really important balance to the system with a coming inside, yeah? We know that Jota is right-footed, so is Mane, so is Diaz. And Osimhen is also right-footed, and so is Nkunku. So the thing with Rafinha and Oyarzabal and Jared Bowen, who for reasons of Brexit has not been included on the shortlist, when he should have been, based on his performance... But he's there.
Well, no, he's not included, Dan, because he's a £40 million player that West Ham are going to ask £70 million for.
Right,
it's the same reason Declan Rice wasn't included in the midfielders.
It's the Premier League tax.
Yeah, 100%. Like, he had a very good season. There's no doubt. He had a really good season. 12 goals, 12 assists in the league.
Yeah.
He played a ton of minutes, played in Europe. But he is West Ham, especially now he's just been called up for England. Yeah. David Gould and David Sullivan are just getting those porn magazines ready and rubbing their little greedy hands together. That's exactly it.
So anyway, the Oyarzabal, Rafinha and Bowen are all left-footed coming off the right. So that is the big attraction with the Mo replacement for me as well. That's another reason why I would prefer Nkunku as the Sadio replacement in this scenario. But in terms of the stats, Gags, Rafinha and Oyarzabal are a level below the four we already discussed as the Mane replacements in terms of all their numbers, all their attacking numbers across the board. They're good, but they're not at the levels of Jota, Mane, Salah, Firmino, let alone Nkunku, Nunez, Osimhen and Danjuma. So they are good players. The highest of the three is actually Bowen over Rafinha and Oyarzabal, but they're all good forwards, but they're all a cut below the ones that, which have been mentioned.
Rafinha is heavily held back by being on a garbage team. That is an atrocious Leeds team. I don't think the left footer is as important. Now, obviously, it would depend on Sadio and Mo going. Like, if we had an out-and-out nine and our main goal outlet was the nine, I don't think the left footer coming in field would be as big a deal. Do you know what I mean? Like, because you're not looking for as much of a goal scorer from that position than you are when Mo is there, because Mo is the primary goal scorer in a Mo, Sadio, Diaz front three. If it's a Diaz and Kunku or Diaz Osimhen pair, and you're looking for that right side, I think your priority has got to be the creator, and that's where it's in Kunku by, I think, a considerable margin.
Yeah. So if we're saying that if Salah leaves, what if Salah doesn't resign? Then yeah, it has to be in Kunku. He's the only one who's got the creative. To be honest, and Bowen, but he's a level below. It's light level below Nkunku and his creativity. So, but yeah, they would be the ones, Gags. I mean, Rafinha's got good creativity numbers, but a lot of that is set pieces, dead ball delivery. He's got solid numbers in open play, and he would improve at a better team. But he does take all lead set plays.
Yeah. And just to make aware, we're aware, Mo has said in a press conference today that he's staying next year no matter what. But we are doing this as a what-if section, okay? So remember, this is what we have to plan. So it's what
Mo is only staying if Mo signs a contract, because there's not a hope Liverpool allow him to go into the last year of his contract. There's not a chance that Liverpool allows him to
I think he's signing.
But I do as well.
We're doing this because, like we said, we want to cover our bases, and we want to make sure we cover all three forwards. As we said, they're legendary for us. We're just going to cover all three bases, even though we know what that news is. So, Mo, numbers-wise, you've already done Nkunku, so the others?
Okay, so I'll come on to both Rafinha and Oyarzabal in just a moment, but just a very quick, interesting aside on Nkunku. He had actually agreed a deal with Arsenal at the end of the January transfer window in 2019, so 3 years ago. Personal terms were agreed. The medical might even have happened. And he was then at PSG. And that deal wasn't concluded because Arsenal offered a fee of about 17 million and PSG were pushing for a little bit more. So had they gone up to about 2022, the deal likely would have been concluded. Now, the deal wasn't concluded. He then joined Leipzig for about 11 or 12 million 6 months later in the summer of 2019. And Arsenal missed out on a player who could have become a real top talent for them. So if we were to sign him, you know, we'd be able to have endless banter at the expense of Arsenal fans over that deal.
Even more banter.
Absolutely, as if there isn't enough.
Wait till we take Saka off them in 2 years' time after they've missed Champions League a couple more years. Then there'll be real banter for the eye. Oh, yeah, him either.
Yeah. But yeah, certainly in terms of Rafinha and Oyarzabal, 40 million, I think, is what would be enough to get him away from Leeds. Leeds, I think, only in the last week or so had again talked about valuing him at 50 million, but clearly they would sell for less than that. So I think 40 million would be more than enough, possibly even less than that. 35 million plus add-ons might be enough with Oyarzabal. 35 million should do for the player. Though, again, correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, but I think that he suffered a cruciate ligament injury just a couple of months back, and he is out until at least October.
That is the expectation. Right. That is the expectation. But it will also... it'll bring his value right the way down. I mean, this is a guy that I think Transfermarkt have him about 65 million. I think they turned down like 60 million from last summer. So you're kind of looking to take advantage of the fact that he is out with a severe enough injury. Yeah, it's not ideal, obviously, but he is an outstanding player, and he's well worth consideration. 9 goals, 3 assists, and just over 1,600 minutes in La Liga is not a bad return, considering it was a very hit-and-miss Sociedad team this season.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, those are the figures. Clearly, Nkunku, considerably more expensive. But, you know, you get what you pay for. And with Nkunku, you're getting a very, very top-class player who is, as both of you guys have mentioned, a level above at least both Rafinha and Oyarzabal.
Yeah, I think that's made my choice.
If you're the best, guys, you've got to get as
I know what you're saying about the left-foot dude, but I think he's just levels above, and, you know, sometimes Mo needs to use his right as well, and he doesn't. So, you know, there'll be loads of things. I mean, you just can't argue with the numbers and the strength and the... I mean, imagine if you ended up getting two of these players, because, in the years...
Do we all think Mo stays?
I think so.
I think he stays as well. I'm curious what Dan and Mo think with regards to... Let's ask this way. Do you think any of them leave? And if you do, who's the most likely one to go of the front three?
Can I go first?
Yeah.
I think Bobby goes for free a year down the line. Mm-hmm. So I think Bobby stays this summer. I think Mane leaves this summer, and I think Mo stays.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am as well. What about the other two boys?
I think the most likely of the three to leave is Salah, unfortunately, because I just don't know if this is all about money. The longer you don't sign a new deal, the more you're missing out on the payment, the difference between your current salary and your new salary, and, you know, you've already left it a year, and, you know, how much, so I don't know. It just, the longer it goes without signing, the less likely I think he is to renew. And I know we did this on a massive podcast with Gags, and we know all the most complex deal we've ever done in our history. But, yeah, it's just...
I think Dave's right, you know, when the player says, "I'm staying," I think there's an element of... You know,
He said, "I'm staying for another year.
No, he's not going to say I'm signing, because he doesn't want to. That's a whole social media storm that Liverpool would love to you know, cash in on, and a video that the signing would bring in money. You know, every YouTube bid brings in tens of thousands of pounds, right? So at the end of the day, you need to make sure that's safe for that. Now, if he's staying, people are now crying that he's going to leave for free. Right, so that's the next thing that they're doing. But from my point of view, I just don't think that's an option. You know, I think when you've got someone like that talent, and yeah, you can't force him out. And I agree with the point that if he wants to leave for free, he will. But if he doesn't get a contract, Liverpool will be like, "Please leave, Mo." And I don't think he's a dickhead. Just don't think he's a dickhead. You know what I mean? Some players just aren't dickheads, and Liverpool want to cash in. You're going to get your blimmin' 500-600k somewhere else. He will go, but I just think...
We're playing a team on Saturday who might have a rather serious interest in him.
Yeah.
Considering Mbappe turned them down. Obviously, we know that Sadio's been linked with Bayern. He's been linked with PSG. If Neymar leaves PSG, Sadio would make sense for them. He's also been linked with Real Madrid. So I think the hope for us is that Mo signs... And that maybe we get a bit of a bidding war going for Sadio, just to drive the price up a little bit.
I think Ward needs to be very smart and actually go up to Real Madrid and say, "Listen, Bayern want Mane, but you lay off Tchouameni, we'll give you Mane for a little bit of a knockdown as well." Sorted. You just have to be smart. You have to be smart about these things. I think
be cheeky as well, would it though?
Yeah, be absolutely. And the player's not signing a contract, so if Mane is refusing to sign a contract, and not, then or whatever, we don't know that. I'm assuming. Then, you know, he goes, and also there's lots of rumours about Mane, not Mo. There's no smoke sometimes without the fire. No smoke. I mean, there's
been no real talk of a Sadio extension either.
Nope.
Like, there's been no constant talk of it. Sadio's extension has rarely been mentioned. It's just like, "Oh, they'll begin talks with Sadio." We haven't already. Well, if we haven't already, I don't know that we're going to. And the same thing, like, I think you could be right about Bobby. I think we run him into the ground next year and he goes for free because
he deserves,
you know,
deserves a big payoff as well. He's done brilliant for us. He's Klopp loves him. He'll give him that respect, you know. But with these two, they still have high, you know, they've still got value in whoever they go to play for the next 4 years. They could get some numbers, right? Both of them, Mane and Mo. And if you want to keep both of them will want similar numbers in wages. That's one thing people don't think about. If you think they're very competitive with each other, they love each other, but they're very competitive with each other. So if Mo's going to get 400k, Mane's going to be like, I don't want to be that far off him, mate. You know what I mean? It's not going to be like they're both on very similar wages now. If you think one's going to be far from the other in wages and the same, all the same, you're having a laugh.
That's thing. They're on the same now. They got them two and Bobby and Virgil when we won the Champions League in 2019. They all got the same contract, 180 grand plus bonus. Now the bonuses might be different, but the base wage is the same. I wouldn't be comfortable giving Sadio a 3 or 4 year contract. Or that kind of money. No, I don't think Sadio's going to age particularly well. We've already seen decline. I know he's had a good season. I know he's scored goals, but nobody can look at Sadio Mane right now and say that's the same guy who was the best player in the league the year we won the title. Whereas I think Mo is still that same guy. I think he's obviously exhausted after the season he's had and what they did to him at the AFCON, playing him 120 minutes four different times. But like Dan put up his creativity numbers, they're still the same, pre-AFCON and post-AFCON. Mo is still the same guy. I don't think Sadio is, and I think he's only going to decline.
I don't give Sadio a more than 2 years max.
Mm.
I think the recruitment in our team and the guys behind the numbers know that as well. That's why there's way more rumours with this, you know.
Sadio is with these players. We've done our job on this to plan for these players if they don't sign in real life, because and I think we're signing players who can replace his output, especially Sadio.
For sure. I
mean, you could argue Nkunku's put up better numbers than Sadio for 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
You've got it. The only debate is over the merits of numbers in the Bundesliga versus the Premier League. That's it.
But there's not that much of a percentage difference, is there?
No, it's pretty.
Well, Jadon Sancho might tell you that there is.
No, that's a different team, man. Sancho comes into our team.
I know. I'm only joking.
Statistically, I think it's about 10-12% potentially difference. Maybe
if he's got 40, what's he got? 50 goal involvements this year or something stupid?
Who? So, Nkunku.
Yeah. So 10%, 12%. He's still.
Let's do a recap, because I think we've done our job really well covering, you know, all these scenarios.
Yes. So midfielders were Mo, would you be comfortable with Nkunku coming in as well? Well, remember, this is a what if, so we're only selling one. So it's not like we're selling two. You know, it's always going to be the one or the other. So that's the way this pod went. That'll be comfortable with Nkunku for you as well, yeah?
Yeah, it would. Yeah, and just to kind of recap on the figures, if you want me to, we're talking at 80 million from Nkunku, 80 million from Nunez to take us up to 160, and then with Tielemans and Kone added into the equation, we are then with those two at 35 and 20 million respectively, we are then up to 215. Million pounds. Now, what I mentioned earlier about
Mo, we're only selling one forward. Remember, so it's we won't be buying two forwards.
Yeah,
there's one or the other. So it's just ours. What we did was just make sure we covered all three.
Okay.
Yeah. So it'd be 80 million plus the two midfielders, basically.
In which case, it's 135. And we'd, you know, if that four that was to go out was Sadio, you know, we're talking 60. If it's Bobby, we're talking, you know, around 30 million. And we, you know, yeah, 25, 30. And then, you know, with the figure I mentioned earlier of 120 million, never mind whatever we might bring in for the likes of Ox and, you know, Darth Sun and others, you know, there'll be plenty of money to cover.
What would be Mo's?
Well, I think Mo's an interesting one in that, yeah, I mean, so with Mo, he is a player that we're probably looking at 100 million plus, maybe in the region about 120 million. You know, 29 years of age, obviously a year left on his contract, but No, rewind back to around, was it 3 years ago when the same club, Real Madrid, who we're facing at this weekend as we speak, paid, what, £90 million, £200 million for Hazard, who also had a year left on his contract.
With massive add-ons. Massive add-ons on that deal.
Absolutely. Yeah, totally. So I think that we would certainly be able to command in the region about £120 from Madrid. And obviously they had lined up a huge amount of money in excess of that as a signing on bonus for Mbappe, because they thought that deal was over the line. So, you know, that they've got those funds to spend, even though obviously some of that might go towards a midfielder that we're quite keen to sign and we thought we had in the bag. But, you know, the next few days will kind of tell us what the outcome of that is. But certainly with Mo, £120 million would be the figure that we would be aiming to bring in. And even if it wasn't Real Madrid, even if they turned elsewhere and went for, I don't know, a Nunez or a Nkunku, I think there should still be one or two clubs who should be able to offer maybe not £120 million, but a very, very sizable amount. Juventus is a club that had been linked with him a couple of months back. That their funds in terms of revenue are not on the level of Liverpool, but they do manage and we saw that, what, 3 years ago when they signed Ronaldo for, I think it was £90 million. So, you know, whoever he ends up with, I think we'd be expecting a very, very considerable fee, one of the biggest transfer fees in history. And, you know, let's not forget, our owners are businessmen first and foremost, and there is not a chance that all of the front three whose contracts expire in a year will be allowed to run their contracts down simultaneously. So I think the likelihood of all three remaining with us going into next season are very, very slim. I think one will go at least from the three. My personal expectation is it would be Sadio that will be going, though my preference would be for Firmino to go, just because I think he of the three has the least amount left in the tank.
Yeah. Totally understood. So to summarise, there you go, as Mo said, the totals, Darth, I think that's you know, with the incoming figures of Anox and the wage savings of, say, all of those players as well, and then Nico and Nat, who will probably go for decent fees, you know, in the tens of millions, you're actually looking at a really, really solid summer there. Really solid. In terms of spend, net spend, it wouldn't be bad at all.
No, it wouldn't. No.
And if it is, remember, what we haven't covered, like you covered last time, if it is just Tchouaméni comes in and then Mane goes, pretty much the same again. You've got 80 and 80 or whatever. And that's very good
scenario. Tchouaméni's within budget. He is the plan A for the signings. And, you know, and if Mane goes, then we invoke the Mane contingency plan. So and yeah, with the £60 million from him. So
that's the thing. And you've got probably 10 to 12 from Nico, 10 to 12 from Nat, 15-16 from Taki, probably 15 from Ox. Like that's potentially 50 odd million as well, just coming in from players that this past season, I know Taki contributed a lot in the cups, but from a league and Champions League point of view, I mean, Taki's big involvement obviously was the Southampton goal. Ox didn't really contribute much in the league this season. Nico and Nat barely played in the league this season, so we're not losing anything with those players going out. And all of that money can then be focused on, if it's Tchouaméni, brilliant. Obviously, we've said if it's Plan B, we'd look at Kone and maybe Youri Tielemans, and that fills the void somehow or somewhat there in midfield. And then, like Dan said, it's just a matter of contingency. If Mane goes, if Mo goes.
Yeah.
Like, we could look at a situation where we sell the four I mentioned, Nico, Nat, Taki and Ox, plus Sadio, and we bring in somewhere in the 115 to 120 million pound range, and then we sign, say, Tchouaméni for 70... and Nkunku or Osimhen for 150.
Yeah.
That's not a big net spend at all.
No, it's not. It's not. It's nothing. No. It's literally nothing. It's literally saying, Liverpool saying, you know what, we'll go buy another one, another player. Because the whole point of this season is reducing those bodies that aren't playing at all and taking money off the wage bill and replacing them with players that are actually going to get minutes in a squad and contribute, you know, and take pressure off of the guys that are there now. We need to take pressure off the guys that are in the team. That's what's hurt us at the end of the season, for sure.
That's the thing. Like, if you have Ali, Kelleher and Pitaluga as your three keepers, and then Adrian kept around for training purposes, Kelleher will get the cups. Pitaluga's on the bench for the cups. You get Trent and Ramsey at right back. Like we've said, Joe Gomez can fill in there. Milner can fill in there. But there's no wasted money there at all. Same at left back, Robbo and Costas. At right centre back, you've got Ibu and Joel. Left centre back, you've got Virgil and Joe. No wasted money there. Reece is like a fifth centre back, break glass, you know, in case of emergency, whatever. No wasted money. In midfield, you've got, let's say, Kone and Naby as the right side, Fabinho and Henderson as the sixes, and Thiago and Tielemans as the left side, if that's what how it works out. And then Milner and Harvey. Milner is a bit of a waste of money in terms of he earns far too much for what he actually is, but he does offer quite a bit off the pitch and in terms of leadership and versatility and all that. So no real wasted money. And
no, then if it's with Klopp saying, I can't imagine being at Liverpool without.
Yeah, exactly. Fight. But then he says all these, he gives all these platitudes to everybody, gags. He said we couldn't have won anything without Ginny Wijnaldum as well, and then we won two cups, manager, almost won the league.
His management is second to none. So.
Exactly. He loves everybody. That's the great thing. But if then in your forward line, you've got, say, Salah and Jota as the two right-sided ones, even though Jota play everywhere, Diaz and Carvalho on the left, and Osimhen or Nkunku plus Bobby to the middle. Like, there's no wasted money there. There's no one who's not contributing. There isn't an ox in that situation. There isn't heavy money being paid out to Dan's kid to be the fifth centre-back on 60 grand a week. There's nobody like that. There's no waste of resource. And not to say waste of resource, but there's...
Origi had a big deal, didn't he?
Yeah, like he's earning 90 grand a week to play Taki, 3 months of the season.
Yeah, Taki's on low money compared to Origi was anyway. So, I agree with that. I agree with the approach. The only one around is Milner. Personally, you know, maybe I'd say, you know, you don't re-sign Milner and you play Jones as well as the...
Yeah, I mean, I that's what I'd prefer as well. I think you get... Curtis is a better player than James Milner. There's no doubt about it. But if you really want to develop Curtis and see what he can become, maybe he would make more sense on loan somewhere. But yeah, I mean, you'd rather sell or let Milner walk, go to Leeds or wherever he wants to go, and keep Curtis. Curtis is more valuable to us.
He'll just keep playing till he's 45.
That's what people keep saying. Oh, you give him a contract and then put him on the coaching staff. James Milner's going to be playing League Two in like 2030 because he'll be able to. And he'll want to.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Have you played for Halifax Town or something? Or Huddersfield?
Yeah, booting lads into the stands. Absolutely no rules. It's James Milner, lads. Lads will be queuing up for his autograph after the game with bruises everywhere and cuts on the face after he's just trolleyed them into the floor. And nobody will mind. Everybody will still love him. That'll be Milner's career. Like, Let him go and have it. I mean, look, I think we know we're in a really good position this summer. The hope, obviously, is we do get Tchouaméni. But the fact is, in multiple positions, we have gone for other players. Like, we went for Julian Brand, didn't get him, got Salah. We went for Mario Götze, didn't get him, got Mane. You know, we haven't gotten our first choice. We went for Ben Chilwell, didn't get him, ended up with Andy Robertson. We don't tend to miss either. The only scenario we haven't covered here today is if Naby leaves. And it's one we did overlook. He's only got a year left. Now, it's a list of one for me, and it's someone we've mentioned. It's Ismaël Bennacer. If Naby left, he'd be the one I'd want. I think he's ideal to come in and replace Naby. So that's that problem solved. If Naby leaves, go and get him.
Superb. And I think that's brought us to a 2-hour pod. 120 minutes, it's like going to extra time. And We don't need penalties this time, thankfully. So, yeah, let's hope that's not the case on Saturday and we get the job done within 90 minutes. Not
Paris, dude.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to try and have a great time. Thank you so much to Mo Chatra, Dave Hendrick and Dan Kennett for joining me on this one. I hope you enjoyed it. It certainly was very interesting. Some amazing footballers outlined and scouted and then, you know, discussed. It's a very exciting summer for Liverpool as well, regardless of what happens this weekend. I am so pumped for what's about to come. It's a really exciting time to be a Liverpool fan. There's really no need for any negativity at all. And it's just great to have a football club in this position. So try and enjoy yourself. If you're in Paris, stay safe. Have a great time. I hopefully will see you somewhere. There are a couple of AI do's happening. So, yeah, get in touch if you want to meet us. But apart from that, yeah, it's going to be a very successful Klopp era. Remember, the Klopp era goes on for another 4 after this at least. So it's going to be fun. A lot of fun. Yes, stay tuned to Anfield Index. There will be lots of coverage for that final going towards it and afterwards as well. We'll try and get some summer content lined up for you as well. I'm sure Dave Hendrick will be on the airwaves all summer too. Yes, thank you guys once again. Catch you very, very soon. Up the Reds.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/Discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Trent Alexander-Arnold.
I'm Curtis Jones.
I am Cody Gakpo.
Putting on the Liverpool toffee the first time, it was a dream come true and I'll never forget that moment.
The new LFC 24-25 season Nike home kit is out now.
Buy it today along with our new goalkeeper kit and training range at your official LFC stores. Online at liverpoolfc.com/store and on the official LFC store app.
You will never walk alone.